Blog Talk Radio.
Today, 1811, Uncle Tom's Cabin's author, Harriet Beecher Stowe. A U.S. senator from Wisconsin, was a progressive candidate when progressive meant something and not a smokescreen for the communist agenda, Senator Robert La Follette. Remember some of the radio show from the 30s, which launched the careers of such people, such greats, opera singers and musical performers. Robert Ball's radio show, his radio show host. I didn't know he was from Illinois. Burl Ives was from Hunt, Illinois. A lot of famous people from Illinois who were in the media, Ronald Reagan, William Holden, and a few others. We won't get into them right now. One of the great German orchestra and opera conductors. He served in the Wehrmacht, as well as other German conductors like Wolfgang Sawallisch, great conductor, Rudolf Kempe. He died in his 60s, which is young for an orchestra conductor. Sam Wanamaker, another great actor, born in Chicago, often plays lawyer roles, I think in, I forgot the program, White Paul. Gene Barry, born in Chicago. Pierre Salinger, who was Robert Kennedy's, President John Kennedy's press secretary. Salinger, I think, was born Jewish heritage, born in France. Communist who studied to be a doctor, Che Guevara, born on this day. Donald Trump, the Donald, great real estate investor, would-be presidential candidate, born on this day. And a publisher of a newspaper, Ralph McAllister Ingersoll, was born on this day. Among the dents, he was not lamented here in the United States. Benedict Arnold, after he betrayed the plans of West Point to the British, and, of course, Major Andre was caught and he was hanged, along with Nathan Hale, who was the Continental Army's Washington spy. Benedict Arnold fled to England. He supported the Crown, George III's armies, became an officer in the English Army, and he fled to England, where he was shunned. He died in 1801 in I believe, London. My Fair Lady, a composer, Camelot, was also one of his shows. He worked with Alan Lowe. Alan J. Lerner. Lerner and Lowe were the composers of these Broadway shows. Great Spanish author, Jorge Luis Borges, born on this day. If you remember the Animal Planet, not Animal Planet, but the Animal Show sponsored by Mutual of Omaha, Marlon Perkins, his birthday today. Among the events in the United States and in the world, in 1642, Massachusetts became the first state to require compulsory education. The United States Army was formed on this day, or started on this day. We had, in 1834, sandpaper was patented and invented. Also, on this date, in Canada, what was known as Lower Canada there in those days, the Canadian Parliament was organized or set up in Kingston, Ontario, which is also the site of Canada's federal prison. It's right by a railroad. I remember passing it when I was going to Montreal for a conference. Some people hope this will happen again in Sin City, San Francisco. In 1850, a fire destroyed part of San Francisco. In 1906, another fire destroyed part of San Francisco, as well as the earthquake. Player piano was invented in 1881 by a guy named John McTammany. I don't think he was related to Tammany Hall, the guy who was founder of Tammany Hall in New York and political corruption. In 1917, General Pershing, the commander of the American Expeditionary Force, AEF, landed in Europe, and he ended up in Paris to keep the United States Army and the AEF together. And a famous one of the officers made a comment in French, "Lafayette, we are here." And that was in response to the fact that the Marquis de Lafayette came to the United States, or the 13 colonies, to fight on the side of Washington and the rebels against the British Crown. 1923, President Harding became the first president to use the radio. He had a great deep voice, and I think we'll play a little clip from him right now. It's amazing. He was also the first president, contrary to all his propaganda about Mr. O, Obama. Harding was accused of having, quote, in those days, the term was Negro blood. And his response to it was, "I can't help it if one of my ancestors jumped over the back fence." So I think we'll play a little clip from here. We go. Harding's, when he commented on what is Americanism.
"My countrymen, first flaming torch of Americanism was lighted in framing the federal constitution in 1787. The pilgrims signed their simple and suggested covenant a full century and a half before, and set aflame their beacon of liberty on the coast of Massachusetts. Other pioneers of new world freedom were rearing their new standards of liberty from Jamestown to Plymouth for five generations before Lexington and Concord heralded the new era. It was all American in the best and result, yet all of it lacked the soul of nationality. In simple truth, there was no thought of nationality in the revolution for American independence. The colonists were resisting a wrong, and freedom was their solace. Once it was achieved, nationality was the only agency suited to its preservation. Americanism really began when robed in nationality. The American Republic began the blaze trail of representative popular government. Representative democracy was proclaimed the state agency of highest human freedom. America headed the forward procession of civil, human, and religious liberty, which ultimately will affect the liberation of all mankind. The federal constitution is the very base of all Americanism, the ark of the covenant of American liberty, the very temple of equal rights. The constitution does abide and ever will, so long as the republic survives. Let us hesitate before we surrender the nationality which is the very soul of highest Americanism. This republic has never failed humanity nor endangered civilization.
Now, also, Senator Robert LaFollette was a presidential candidate about the same time as Harding, and he was Wisconsin was known as, quote, a progressive state, and progressivism in those days meant limited government rights of the individual, protecting small business and encouraging small business. After World War II, the Communist Party went into their political closet, and because Stalin was stomping all over Europe, and it was pretty evident what he wanted to do, conquer Europe and impose communism on as much of the world as possible. And so the Communist Party of America went into the political closet and came out as, quote, progressive. So progressive today does not mean the same thing as it did in LaFollette's day. And here is LaFollette speaking on every citizen must do his duty. This is from the Berzola Carson Archives.
America is not made, it's in the making. It has today to meet an impending crisis, menacing as any in the nation's history. It does not call a sound to arms, but it is nonetheless a call to patriotism and to higher ideals in citizenship. The patriotic citizenship of the country must take its stand and demand of wealth that it shall conduct its business lawfully, that it shall no longer furnish the most flagrant examples of persistent violation of statutes while invoking the protection of the courts, that it shall not destroy the equality of opportunity, the right to the pursuit of happiness guaranteed by the Constitution, that it shall keep its powerful hands off from legislative manipulation, that it shall not corrupt, but shall obey the government that guards and protects its rights. Mere passive citizenship is not enough. Men must be aggressive for what is right if government is to be saved from those who are aggressive for what is wrong. There is work for everyone. The field is large. It is a glorious service, this service for the country. The call comes to every citizen. It is an unending struggle to make and keep government representative. Each one should count it a patriotic duty to build at least a part of his life into the life of his country, to do his share in the making of America according to the plan of the Father.
That was Robert LaFollette, and was a good old what to call a stump speech. Also on this day in 1938, chlorophyll was patented by a guy named Ben Grishkinov. 1940, an unfortunate date in French history. The German army this time marched into Paris, and of course, this is interesting, that cars were banned. Jews were not allowed to have cars or bicycles, but bicycles became the mode of transportation, and there were some people who did have cars, the Peugeots and the Citroëns, and they ran on wood in many cases. It's quite interesting how this bicycle agenda started in Europe during the German occupation of the occupied countries. In 1942, the first the U.S. Army produced the first bazooka rocket. And 1944, this has a particular connection. Roman Puchinsky, a former journalist, a real journalist, and a congressman from Chicago, later a congressman from Chicago, he was the pilot in Curtis LeMay's, what was then known as the United States Army Air Force. Puchinsky flew the first B-29 that bombed Tokyo. Now, prior in 1942, there was the B-25 with Colonel Doolittle, Jimmy Doolittle, and that was a B-25, a smaller plane which flew off the deck of the USS Hornet. The model the successor of that ship is over in Alameda County today. But Puchinsky was in the under the command of General Curtis LeMay, and the U.S. Army and under General MacArthur had conquered these islands where the B-29s could have a base and fly and bomb Tokyo. Puchinsky later became a U.S. congressman, and he worked in the Democratic political machine in Cook County. Polish Catholic, Polish ethnic, and Roman Catholic. I debated him during the Vietnam War at Wright College, and he had a bad habit, which I learned about debaters, that when I tried to make a point, he would breathe in my direction, and we were close enough, I realized he had bad breath. So when I was going to make a point, I turned away from him. But during that debate, somebody raised a question about the Vietnam War, and then I chimed in. What is happening to the pilots who are being shot down by Ho Chi Minh's rockets and that? Puchinsky said that as a pilot, he had asked President Lyndon B. Johnson, who was the president successor to John F. Kennedy, he said that he had suggested to LBJ to put tape recorders in the cockpits of the warplanes. That later idea was extended to the commercial jets. So the father of the tape recorder, the black box as it's known today, is Roman Puchinsky. And, of course, unfortunately, I lost the tape of that debate. Of course, that was 1964-65. But I distinctly remember it, and there are also photos, if I can find them, of that famous debate. My teacher at the time, the great Professor Dolly Farnstrom, who had taught Kim Novak and had tutored people like Rock Hudson and several other Hollywood actors, people who later went on to Hollywood and to the stage, she was a graduate, a professor from Northwestern University School of Speech. Great teacher. I had her for four straight classes, and she was one of the sponsors of the debate between myself and U.S. Representative Roman Puchinsky. She also, as part of a combined social science and speech class, had me go down to the south side of Chicago to the Woodlawn Project, which was started and run at that time by Saul Alinsky. I met Alinsky, but he wouldn't give me an interview, and I couldn't talk to him. I also met SDS, Students for Democratic Society, and who were down on the south side of Chicago. They were the true believers. I don't know where they're at today. So it was an interesting period. Among the other day, events today, we had President Eisenhower in 1954. He was the one who I guess by executive order, was responsible for the term "under God," which is on our coinage and our a lot of the official communiques that came out of the White House at that time. Also, the one of the last things, 1949, the state back to the Vietnam War, state of Vietnam was set up under Ho Chi Minh. Now, the deal was that Vietnam was supposed to be one state. Instead, there was this battle between the South and the North, and Ho Chi Minh, who had his forces in the North, had fought with the people in the South, Nguyen Diem, and that crowd, and the United States. Eisenhower, I think it was Truman that sent the first military advisors to Vietnam. Eisenhower sent about 1,000. Kennedy sent 10,000, and was LBJ who sent 100,000, and it ended up being 500,000. And I lost half of my college class. Those who went in, who were drafted, I did military draftee and deserter, or would-be deserter, or AWOL. Military personnel. I did counseling for them under the University Code of Military Justice. So it was an interesting period for me. in 1982, we had the Argentinians referred to it as the Malvinas. The British referred to it as the Falkland Islands. And it's famous because it was also a naval base at the very bottom of South America. Anyway, I call it the Falkland-Malvinas War, Argentine. They had exocet rockets, and the Argentine Air Force had American equipment, but the fuses they had, and we didn't provide new ones, were defective. But the exocet rockets did sink, I think, the British ship HMS Sheffield, and it sank a few other ships. The British got even. They sank a Argentine Navy ship called the General Belgrano, which had been a U.S. Navy ship, which was sold to Argentina. So the Argentines lost, and although they still claim the Malvinas, and the British still say it's ours, the Falklands. So that's where things are at. So I think we'll end, I think it's appropriate today to, we missed General Berrigan, who retired in San Francisco here, and he was the chief engineer and deputy commander of the Mulberry Bridges, the construction and using them, towing them over to Normandy in World War II. And I think, we think we should play a little clip to honor him. It was June 5th, and we missed that. So here's General Berrigan, who I interviewed before he died.
I was in San Francisco, and I had 4 years to do.
Wrong one. Here it is.
Good to know, Eisenhower. Were you posted in England during the war?
No. Just in World War II, Eisenhower commanded the Normandy landing, I was under the chief engineer's chief of construction then. I had a lot of experience then, from 1927 to, 41.
Right. So Normandy was 44.
44, yeah.
So 17 years.
And I'd been serving, I served in the Portland, Oregon district, and the colonel I was served under was choice for his chief engineer, and he chose me to be the chief of construction because he knew what I could do from the fact that I served with him in the Portland, and we did things for putting in government corners and things like that, and even more different engineering.
Now those mulberries, I think they call them, was that a British invention or was that American? Those landing, they were like flat things to land on the beach.
I think the name came from the British. Yes.
Now, during war, do you do any engineering for like the troops, like any sanitation, or is that done by the veterinarian?
Oh no, the Corps of Engineers have districts and divisions all over the country. Mm-hmm. Like they got a district and a division in San Francisco. And the division covers districts that Sacramento and Los Angeles and San Francisco, and they have a division in Portland that covers districts in Walla Walla and Seattle.
Now, in the liberated areas of Europe, did the Army Corps of Engineers come behind rebuild the facilities, the sanitation sewers that were destroyed, or was that left to civilian authorities?
No, if it was for troops, we were the ones that built them. In other words, we built big installations for divisions in California. Even they had division headquarters in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle.
So you worked the whole West Coast?
Well, Portland and Seattle were under one.
Okay, we're going to end. I had an interference there, a phone call, and I had to shut it off. We'll end with our usual thing, politics and poker, and of course that plays into a lot of things that happened today. We'll be back Monday, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas, and we will play Politics and Poker, our theme song, and end today. And have a safe weekend.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the time?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. Neither games for children, neither game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Play for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Running neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck!
We'll be back Monday at 4 p.m. and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We should have the dollar seat fare from Northern California to Southern California and Nevada. That should be up. And also the latest missing youth. This fear is not a reality, but it's a possibility. The Sean Seedy, a child, a young male who was brain injured and disappeared about 3 weeks ago. He was last seen entering a car and nobody has seen him since, and his cell phone went dead. His family is very concerned. Of course, it's sexual predators do use their cars to pick up vulnerable both boys and girls and young males, and they ended up a lot of them, like the victims of John Gacy, and Randy Kraft end up being drugged, tortured, mutilated, and dead. And we hope this is not the case with Sean Seedy, and he is found and returned safely to his family. So it's Peter Paul Brizola. Good night, and have a safe weekend. And to you youths out there, don't get into cars with people driven by people that you don't know. So be safe. Have a safe weekend, and we'll see you Monday. We'll be here Monday at 4 p.m. Good night.